Good evening and welcome to the Finance and Governance Committee for Monday, September 12th. I am joined by my fellow council members, committee members, I should say, and council members, Council Member Craig Kroller and Cynthia Felix-Janis Johnson. Let's go ahead and move on to the business agenda, item A, and I believe that is...
Is it going to be me? Yeah, so Vicki Carlson, Finance Director, for the record. Just so you know, on the agenda, the first item listed is the cancellation of outstanding claims and payroll checks, but that actually starts on page 9, so the two items in the packet were reversed. So starting on page 9, this is an annual process that we do. Anything that is stale dated, we do have to cancel both the general fund accounts payable as well as payroll checks. We send those, we report to the state, but we do not send the funds to the state. The list of cancellations is on page 13 of the packet, and you can see that most of them are witness fees. Any questions?
My only comment is this is standard procedure. I thought the FDA is thorough. I'm good with it.
Okay, thank you.
This is, I mean, I don't know if this is something that Vicki can explain, but there's so many witness fees that are unclaimed. Is this like a reoccurring thing that happens every year?
Yes, it is. And to be honest, we are looking to find other ways of paying witnesses.
Okay.
The problem is that they get checks for $10, $15, $20 and they don't cash them. We do send letters to them trying to get them to cash them, but when they don't, this is the process we take as we send it to unclaimed property.
Okay.
I don't have any questions. It's pretty self-explanatory. A lot of police false alarms and other false alarms. And then the witness thing, I know if you participate, we have to have all our contact information. And so what they have is presented. So are we comfortable forwarding this to the 919 regular meeting?
Yes.
Which one are we doing?
So the items are out of order. So I went with the... Item A, which is the cancellation of outstanding claims, which is on page 9.
Okay, that's what I
thought.
That's
the
way to meet, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Are we comfortable with
this?
Yes. Okay. And then item A, which is in the front, which I referenced.
Okay.
Is there any questions regarding this particular item?
Not at all. Standard procedure happens every year.
I have a question. What is the, I was aware of the fire alarm, but this says police alarm?
We do bill for both police false alarms as well as fire false alarms. And when we can't collect on them, we do have to clear our books and remove them from our books. And just because we remove them from the books does not mean we don't continue to collect on them. It just means we don't overstate our accounts receivable and revenue balances. So this trues up our books. And if we cancel something and we do get revenue coming in at a later date, it's just recorded as new revenue. And that does happen occasionally, not very often with the false alarms, though.
I see some, like, community organizations in here that we're familiar with.
Yes, we have tried to track them down. We continue to try and track them down. If we get contact information and we get a response, we will get them paid. Oftentimes, it's difficult getting the right person if they're not responsive.
You're talking about sort of false alarms.
For false alarms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for anything that's outstanding accounts receivable, whether it's a false alarm or whether it's some of these others, like there's a couple others on the list, like Port Bentway from King LASIK, whether it's like Public Works.
Do we have a process? Does anybody ever write, for example, I see some nonprofits, some maybe homeowners here. What if someone writes and says they can't pay it? Do we have some kind of mitigation?
We do, but I don't actually recall anybody writing with that to say they can't pay. It's usually just they don't respond at all.
Okay.
But if somebody did, in the past when somebody can't pay, we do work with them. We'll put them on a payment plan. So we're happy to work with people as long as they reach out to us.
Okay.
I'll just add that. Before I lived in Tukwila and I was working while in college, I worked at Nordstrom Rack. And we would tip off the alarm and then we, you know, it's a part of our job to turn it off. And sometimes it didn't. And then if you remember, we did pass policies on recovery for these services, and this is in alignment with that piece.
Yes.
If there's standing policy on alarms, and we go through it, we go through it, I think, every year. You know, like some of these, you know, it's the location, but the police respond and they come, you know, the business is aware of the process to mitigate, as a matter of fact. So most of the time they'll say, this was a false alarm because of, and, you know, or, and they won't do it through a letter. They'll come to the city and say, hey, this is what happened.
Correct.
But again, there's policy on alarms, because if we ever get into a, we either don't respond or get away from somewhat of cost recovery. And Councilmember Crowley, you remember we went through that process to figure out how we can make it amenable to folks. Probably that could be support to pay. And so there is a process that also police and fire do.
Okay.
All right. So are we comfortable forwarding this to 9:19 regular meeting? Consent? All right. Item C, once again, Finance Director.
And this is our first budget section that we're bringing to the committee. This is our Fireman's Pension Fund. It is a dedicated revenue source. We receive the revenues from the fire insurance premium tax the state collects. They pass it on to us based on the number of retirees we have receiving the pensions. For 2023-2024, we have 7 firefighters that will be qualifying for the pension. So again, it's a dedicated revenue source. The expenditure is based on what we've seen trend-wise these last couple of years. And just as I've been asked this question before, so I'll just go ahead and put this on the table. Once we no longer have any retirees in the system, any funds remaining stay with the city, and we're allowed to use it for our LEF 1 expenditures, because we do have about 32 LEF 1 members that we're paying medical on. And so once this pension is no longer applicable to us, we will no longer receive the fireman's pension tax, but the remaining funds can then go to pay for LEF 1 responsibilities.
Okay. Any members, questions?
I'd say I'm comfortable with this particular item, so.
I don't have any questions. I'm comfortable.
Very comfortable for any answers, because you're all
meeting. Then we can check one off the box.
All right. Now on to item D, which is not the finance, but it is Comfort.
Yes, thank you, Chair. This is something that the committee requested in July. I had brought a resolution forward that would do it. Honorary naming of a street section after former Mayor Haggerton. The committee asked to take another look at a beefing up the naming policy for the city, because what we had before, which is on page 21 in your packet, is pretty silent on a lot of detail and not particularly helpful. So I took the committee's direction, did a lot of research on what other cities have in place, and the draft before you is page 25. I kept my info memo very high level because I really wanted you to spend time reading the draft policy itself. So page 25 establishes purpose, and what I heard, one of the themes I heard strongly from the committee, is that you would want to ensure any naming decisions are compatible with the best interests of the community. So I highlighted that from the very beginning. Talks about scope, what this applies to, talks about authority. The criteria in section 4 is roughly the same as what exists already. I expanded some language, particularly with regard to number 7 and 8 on the next page. So persons who have made an outstanding civic contribution. And then the next one is a little bit new, names of city officials who serve for a minimum of 10 years. That's something that's pretty common in other policies. It's to prevent, you know, making a rash decision about something, it would highlight somebody that's done a little bit more than just, you know, a normal regular city employee that may be asking for some kind of recognition. Sorry, I was kind of stumbling over that one. Section 5, I just want to bring your attention to a few things. Property would not normally be named for living individuals. We do see exceptions to that. Just a few years ago at Ballfield was named after Joe Duffy, and I think that the community really appreciated that, and I know the council did. property named after individuals would require written consent of the named party's representative. That would be broad enough to actually include the named party as their own representative. Item D, this is something that I saw consistently in other cities' policies. A lapse of at least 12 months between the date of the death of a person or an event to be commemorated. That's the one that really prevents a hasty decision. And I thought it was good, so I wrote it in here. And then a new section E, this is something that I was influenced by the committee's direction. Naming commemorations that are significant to underrepresented populations should be encouraged and prioritized. The next few sections get into procedures themselves, so there's a lot of consistency across the three. Suggestions could be made by any member of the community, basically, but then there would be a consistent process to react to those. They must be accompanied by written rationale for the name and how it applies to the criteria in this policy. One thing that I heard from the committee is how to involve the community in these decisions. I thought a lot about that. There was a suggestion made by Kate Kroller to maybe involve the chairs of the boards and commissions, but that can be a little bit unwieldy with regards to the ethics board. You know, these are people that didn't sign up for a specific thing, and to convene their schedules and to get them up to speed, it's a little bit clunky. So I thought to make a more broad outreach initiative, you would just notify every single board and commission member, along with other members of the community. We're doing broad outreach here, right? But we would send an email to all the boards and commissions members because you want to get broad feedback. And it would basically be an open public comment period. So for new property naming, that open period would be for 30 days. And then it would go through a legislative process by which the city council would review all public comment received. Next page talks about street renaming procedures. And this was one that you did talk about in your July meeting about when it would be appropriate to do that and how we would accommodate it. I said right from the beginning, it's generally discouraged due to impacts to property owners, emergency response times, and regional wayfinding. We don't want to be in a situation as a city where you're renaming streets a whole lot. That would be kind of chaotic. So again, accompanied by written rationale, if somebody wants to do this, we would want to get support of at least 75% of affected property owners, which would be gathered at the expense of the proponent, which could in certain situations be the city, but oftentimes it would be a community member. And then again, there would be an open public comment period. But in this case, instead of 30 days, I did 90 days because this would be a significant impact to the city to have a street be renamed. And again, notification to all the boards and commission members in addition to other members of the community via the social media channels, et cetera. City Council would review all that comment. And then there would be an additional item F, if the city wanted to move forward with this, the council would designate an effective date that would provide sufficient time for the property owners to mitigate that name change. Finally, Section 8, honorary street designations. This has to do with the resolution I brought forward in July, and this would be honorary designation intended to recognize someone without officially changing the name of the street. Again, accompanied by written rationale for the name and significance to the criteria, the public comment period, I brought it back down to 30 because this is less of an impact than the full street renaming, notification broadly to the community, including boards and commission members, and then again, the city council determining whether the public interest is served. And that is my summary of the policy. I did bring copies only because it came up by Councilmember Delafrinos Johnson. The Parks Department runs a bench program. And so I just wanted to make sure you were aware of that. I didn't cross-reference, but I kept it out of the policy. To me, it's a completely different thing, but I wanted to provide you those details. And with that, I'll turn it back to the chair.
Thanks. Any questions?
So the only thing that I have a little bit of a squirmy feeling about is section 7C. I'll just look at your summary here, where you're saying 75% of the property owners have to support. I don't buy into that. I think they ought to be notified. At least 75% ought to be notified, about 100%. But to have them weigh in on whether or not want to do something honorary or not doesn't make sense to me.
So
I mean, sorry, rename, but yeah. It's still... we confuse the terms, but to do something in honor of somebody.
Got it.
I don't really think, you know, the business or the chamber or people like that are making those decisions. I certainly think you got to give them a period of time, like the rest of the public, for feedback. And if there's a real thorn in their side, we'll sense it at the council for you and try to address it or pick another location, right? So they have a right to come bark about it if it matters to them, but I don't want to put them in a judgment seat where, like, you know, they're one business short and you can't do this, and this just keeps happening because, you know, so.
Sure, that's fair.
Or only 1% responds, and therefore we never get to the 75. It just feels overkill.
Okay.
I agree.
And then, yeah. I think the waiting periods, it said 90 days somewhere.
90 days for the street renaming.
Yeah.
I think, and then it goes to the city council, which is another month or so. And I would say maybe 60 days.
Okay.
That's my input on it. I don't want to be like easy free, but it's just to have it in suspense for them like that long, you know. Reactions within 60 days make sense, and then there's a couple of public comments in the COW, and then later at the actual regular meeting, you've already killed another month right there, so you can get your 90 and still think it's going to be 120.
Okay.
Yep.
I agree with the comments made by Councilmember Kreller. The written support is a little too much. Notification seems sufficient. I could go either way on the 90 or 60 days. Knowing how our processes work, it's probably going to be like, I don't think it matters. I had comments about section 4, subsection A8. And that is, it's the one about the minimum of 10 years, and then it says, outstanding contributions. One thing that I thought was missing, because it says at the very end of the sentence, it says outstanding contributions over and above normal duties required by their positions and had a positive impact on the past and future development of programs, projects, or facilities. And I wrote and the people of Tukwila or the people. And I felt like that was missing, like a connection to that, like the people and the community, because these are just the tangible things. So that would be my comment, is add like people of Tukwila somewhere in this. And then section 6, subsection C. I remember when we had this conversation before, we had talked about the boards and the commissions being involved, and I read the other ordinance that, like the older one.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering whether we could add something like city council may request input from a board, the boards or commissions. Like, because for example, when it's a parks renamed, when it's a park being renamed, it would make sense for that to go to the parks commission for input, or we wanted to have something reviewed by the Equity and Social Justice Commission for whatever reason. You know, I just want to be able to have that. I think it would be good to have that, like, expressly put in here, that we have that ability versus, like, oh, we decide, and it's not in here. Like, we just decide for this one request but not another request. Then it's, like, weird. It's not covered. So,
yeah, that makes sense to me.
Great. So I agree with Councilor Kroller. I think that's on her comment on the 75%. I hope we've all learned that a city is broader than, you know, like one portion of its parts, you know, communities and city involved. And I think that gets us to a place where there isn't a disproportionate amount of influence from one segment of the population. I'm a little bit, I agree with the ad from Councilmember Dale Spence Johnson on the first part of adding the people of Tukwila. But the one that I don't agree with is a written note of justification, and the reason why is the city is in an unfortunate position of having to explain why this even came up and having folks who are asking for a memorial of, they need to be able to articulate what the reason why. And I would just say that sometimes we conflate other activities that someone may have influenced, but it may not be directly related to the city. And so I do think that a notification needs to be, or a written request.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is having to put it somewhat down in writing makes it so folks think through what they're proposing and be able to, in their own words, why they think that this is the appropriate step.
So the part that you, to me, that's what is meant when it says must be accompanied by written rationale for the name. Okay.
Yeah, but she's saying.
I think written rationale should be required. Okay. I'm just saying, I think that we should add that that city council may request input from boards or commissions.
No, yeah, that's.
Written request, yeah.
Written request, but I thought you said the written request.
Keep that.
Okay. And then the boards and commissions, I like the may consider. That's not an issue.
Yeah.
I thought you were.
Oh, no. I think written, I agree with you.
Okay. And I guess to conclude, I would just say, providing a level of specificity and some comparable activities is good. We have a process that we can hold up and say we've done it once and if we move forward with this.
I have a couple more questions. In your research, did you find any kinds of criteria? If I go into certain cities, I think of like Missoula, Montana, all the streets are named after trees in an alphabetical order.
Mm-hmm.
If you go into D.C., I can't remember, I think it's a lot of states in alphabetical order.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to pick, things that aren't really specific to Tequila. But if we decide to do something to honor indigenous peoples in this area, I want to do an alphabetical order or African-American history or Asian-American history, whatever, that doesn't really fit into this, does it? If we decide to actually do a grid or as a city, we don't really fit here, do we?
You don't, but we could always, if the council gives direction at some point in the future that you'd like to do some kind of naming process approach for a broad area, we would certainly amend this, I guess, to accommodate it. I can't think of how it would fit in right now.
Did you run into anything like that?
Not that I can recall.
That's like a city planning thing that gets passed by.
Of course not. And I would just say that I think we could justify with what's here.
Yeah.
Why we're going to make a change. Let's say George Bush, right? We learned about George Bush.
Right.
That's a cool George Bush.
Yeah.
And we can justify about the commitment. I think we can do the same about indigenous folks and use it also as an opportunity to educate. This is the person and this is why.
And then the second question is, were there any writings on how to give an easy out if we run into something weird, like it's a we come to find out that they were a Confederate general or something like that. It just doesn't go well with the taste and the culture and the welcoming nature that we have in Tequila. Just, rub somebody the wrong way. Like they're going through a lot of that in the South right now.
Yeah, I would say that as this is currently proposed, in Section 6F, name changes shall be subject to the criteria and procedures set forth in this policy. So, again, any member of the community, including a council member that stumbled upon something negative about some, don't need to throw out any. Anyway, the name change would be suggested and then be subject to these as well. I think what you're saying is maybe, is there going to be a comprehensive look at all of the names? That's a future work plan item. This doesn't speak to a comprehensive approach, but a name change that would be for that reason could be covered by this policy as it's written.
And then this will sound disrespectful, but you got to ask it. If a name has been there long enough and nobody has a clue who that person is, mm-hmm. It doesn't have relevance to the city at that time. Mm-hmm. What's the off-ramp for that as well?
A change.
Right.
Propose a change.
And then on the honorary ones, do we have any time limits for how long we'll be there?
Not as it's written now. I did see some cities have it be temporary.
For a certain period of time.
Yep.
Okay. Just food for thought.
Sure.
We're going to take this close to COW, right? We're not making a decision right
now. We are going to COW. Good. Is everyone comfortable with that?
Yeah.
All right. Sure.
Thank you.
All right. We listen to these. Thank you.
Thanks, Sarah.